there was the famous prophecy of the popes, and you did some research, Chris, that enabled you to bring it into the modern world. In other words, data that was thought to have been lost wasn't lost at all.
That's correct. I mean, I did a lot of investigation. You know, I didn't just accept this Catholic prophecy at face value. I it's not a biblical prophecy. I'm not a Catholic. I don't really have any vested interest in believing in it. Mm-hmm. So I started with, you know, a healthy dose of skepticism and looked at the prophecy in some detail to see if there were any good reasons to believe it. And I mentioned on the last show, Benedict the 15th with the religion depopulated prediction was one of the ones that, you know, really made me take serious notice of it. But, you know, some of the more recent predictions have also fallen into place in a way that is pretty compelling. Like John Paul I, who was famous for, you know, one of the shortest papacies in history with only 33 days, his motto was from the midst of the moon. And, it's quite interesting that he was born in a diocese named Belluno, which means beautiful moon. Hmm. That's the kind of thing that, you know, either they picked him on purpose based on where he was from, or the prophecy was predicting the future. I mean, because also, his ascendancy to the papacy when he took office was right in the middle of a half moon in its waning phase, which is the sort of thing that lines up perfectly with in the midst of the moon. And the next pope, John Paul II, his prophecy is in Latin. The English translation would be from the labor of the sun. And, you know, it's quite amazing that he was born during an eclipse and then he was buried during an eclipse. And you can very easily see the labor of the sun predicted thousands of years ahead of time right there.
And you found a 1951 book that named the year 2012 as the year of the last pope.
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of the most astounding finds that you'll be able to read about in our book, Petrus Romanus, The Final Pope Is Here, that you're not going to see anywhere else. I just didn't see it in any of the other literature that this Belgian Jesuit, René Thibault, calculated the year 2012 as the year of the final pope from five or six different angles.
Wow, that's amazing. And Tom, we talked about the serendipity, the blessing. The way all these ideas came together to produce this book is a story in itself.
It is a story in itself. And you know something else? I've been on the show with you before.
Right.
And the reason the date 2012 was on there had to do with a lot of the ancient cultures, different people who looked forward into the future. Of course, there's been this whole new age fascination with the end of the Mayan calendar.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, I want to say I'm glad that this week in some place in Old Mexico that they found some more Mayan documents that say the world's not going to end in the year 2012, that was not a correct interpretation, because where I was saying this a few years ago, it's not what the prophecy says, it's not what the calendar says, and I'm sick of hearing that the Mayans said that the world's going to end in 2012. They didn't. What they did prophesy was the calendar would roll over and there would come the dawn of a new age. And
wow.
That this new age, by the way, would be witnessed by the arrival of two great voices, two great men on earth. Sounds very much like the coming of the false prophet and the Antichrist, which corresponds very much with the prophecy of the popes. And so there was, down through time, we found out that even Jonathan Edwards, old preachers in the hands of an angry God, Jonathan Edwards,
right.
When from a historicist's point of view, looking forward into the future, speculating when the false prophet would arrive, the Antichrist, and when the papacy would be destroyed, and sets it in the years 2012 and 2016. How many of us evangelicals knew that Jonathan Edwards believed that? Since then, we've found out there's something like over a dozen more that lived during those years that also pointed to the years 2012 and 2016.
Well, you know, when I read this, in fact, I was privileged to be able to read the manuscript before the book came to print. And as I read this, gentlemen, I was struck by one thing. That it's time for all this to be publicized. In other words, there seems to be a timeliness about this book. And we're not talking about the Mayan prophecies here. We're talking about the flow of history. And by the way, the flow of history as described in our Bible.
Yeah, exactly right. But the Maya, however, did set a date, 2012.
Yes, they did.
And their prophets believe that it will be marked by the return of their flying dragon god. This sounds very prophetic, too, doesn't it?
Indeed, it
does. In the
year
2012. The Aztec calendar ends in 2012 with the return of their flying dragon god. The Cherokee Indian calendar ends in 2012 with the return of their flying dragon god. The Hindu Kali Yuga calendar ends in the year 2012 at the end of the age of the male demon. That list goes on and on. There's other strange things. They just found a second stele of some kind in Mexico that is the second one talking about the rising up from the underworld of the Mayan god Bolanyaktecu. This is the god that oversees the old bones and the seed of the old ones in the underworld with Quetzalcoatl. These are going to rise in the year 2012. When you read those cosmologies, it sounds very much like they're describing the book of Revelation.
Absolutely.
In which it says a time is going to come in which the beast is going to rise up out of the bottomless pit and enter into Apollyon, Apollo, the spirit that's identified in antiquity, and connected to the coming of Antichrist.
We've, on our last Prophecy in the News, we talked about the lost book that wasn't really lost, and we talked about the Belgian gentleman. All fit together to make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. And you've had that experience, right?
Well, absolutely. You know, we're talking about the historicist interpretation of the book of Revelation. You know, I was in seminary in a church history sequence, and I wanted to look at the way classical Christian thinkers throughout history had interpreted the book of Revelation. And what I discovered is, if you look from the time of the Reformation forward, almost unanimously from the time of Luther through about 1900 or so, many of these fellows believed that the Pope was the Antichrist. And I mean, unequivocally, you could look at Spurgeon or even John Wesley, John Calvin. All of these great Christian commentators throughout history believe that. And they based the reign of Antichrist on their interpretation of when the Pope declared himself to be the universal bishop over the whole church. And a lot of them believed it was then. And then they also allowed for a time, about 150 years later, in 756 AD, when the Pope became a temporal power, when he began to have political control over land, when they got the papal states in Italy. And now they did that based on a fraudulent document known as the Donation of Constantine, and they actually went to war and took over a big area of real estate. Now, when the Pope did that, a lot of commentators believe that they kind of made a Faustian bargain, if you will, where they kind of sold out to the powers of the world. So what they did is they interpret the 1260 days in the book of Revelation chapter 12 as years, much like what we do with the prophecy, the 70 weeks of Daniel, the year-to-day correspondence. So they extrapolate 1260 years from 756. Some start at 752, and that lands you right in the period of 2012 to 2016. Now, Jonathan Edwards was one of those who allowed for that, and so you have this conflation of Protestant interpretations for most of the 17th, 18th, 19th century, all predicting that this period of time they were in now would be the fall of the Antichrist system, which they believed was Rome.
Now, it's interesting that in the 19th century, we saw the rise, following John Nelson Darby and the Plymouth Brethren and so forth, we saw the rise of dispensationalism. And I think a de-emphasis on the idea that the Pope was the Antichrist. In other words, we've shifted into a different way of interpreting the Bible right now. And yet, here we find ourselves at the very moment when a lot of these ancient ideas seem to be congealing, coming together in a particular way.
Well, that's right, Gary. And I wrote a chapter in the book. It's called Historicism Back to the Future. And I actually kind of advocate a hybrid approach. You know, I looked at, you know, all these great Bible commentators over time thought that. Were they all wrong? And maybe there's room for elements of both to be true. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the tack I take in the book. Because, I mean, obviously, there's a final Antichrist. You know, John wrote in the book of 1 John, many antichrists have come, right? That was back in the first century. So, you know, I think sometimes we see the antichrist as one ultimate figure, but it's also been many figures over time. So there's room for both elements of these interpretations to sort of coincide and work together.
Well, now, you're not naming the Antichrist.
Absolutely not.
At all
no.
in this book.
No.
And in fact, that's not the preoccupation of the book. The preoccupation of the book is the fulfillment of an extremely well-documented prophecy, which coincides with other prophecies. Even the elders of Israel named the year 2012.
They did. And let me say, too, we don't try to name who the Antichrist is.
Right.
We think this is bad practice among Christians to
Absolutely.
Set dates and name people and do all of that.
I agree.
But it is more than just an excuse, though, to use the end of this medieval prophecy as an opportunity to talk about the future coming of the false prophet and the Antichrist. Especially what some Catholic listeners to your program may discover is that there are many Catholics, including modern-day Catholics, mystics, who are interpreting the next pope following Benedict, and they believe that he will be the false prophet, not the Antichrist, but the false prophet. He will be a religious figure who will help guide the allegiance of the world's religious communities into accepting this man of sin as a political savior, if you will. And when you think about Rome, this is one of the reasons why even many of their own writers down through time have agreed that, for instance, the Vatican City is Mystery Babylon. It is the city on seven hills. Many of their own writers have admitted that. And we see the destruction of it, of course, in the book of Revelation.
Yeah.
But when you look at Rome as a city, and when you look at it as both a religious and political platform, I mean, what other religious identity is there on earth that has something like 120 countries that they have relationships with? They have 90-some ambassadors that are parked there in the Vatican City that do business. Who has those kind of diplomatic relations? I don't think the Baptists do. I don't, you know. So the Vatican is set up in a way that is unique to be a fulfillment of this end times prophecy. Well, one thing also that should be clarified is that the Pope following Pope Benedict does not have to have the Christian name Peter, or even be known popularly as Peter the Roman,
really,
in order to be a fulfillment of this prophecy, for several reasons. First of all, because every pope is considered to be the latest Peter in the line. They're all considered to be sitting on the throne of Peter. So in that sense, they're all Peter. They're the next Peter. But all that would have to happen, really, is for an Italian to be voted in to be known as Peter the Roman. Now, we do, however, go into the book. We talk about our top 10 candidates for the role of Peter the Roman.
Wow.
And this based on their papability, what is believed about them, the fact that they're turning up in the Vatican's own list and Vatican watchers the list. There's a kind of a predictive process around this. Well, right at the top in our list is the current Secretary of State at the Vatican. He's the Pope's Carmelingo. His name happens to be Tarcisio Pietro Peter Bertoni, who was born in Romano. So if he winds up being the Pope, that's going to be a scary fact. But that doesn't have to happen, and there's numerous other ways in which that prophecy could be fulfilled. So we wanted people to be aware of that. Another one, Peter Turkson of Ghana, as a young pope, is considered to be very papable. He, too, could be Peter the Roman. So numerous ways in which that prophecy could be fulfilled. And we believe that it is unfolding now to occur in the year 2012.
Well, you know, Chris, as Tom was talking a moment ago, it really struck me that Roman Catholics believe these prophecies. That is to say, this is not a Gentile conspiracy, or, you know, or some concocted thing among church leaders to try to make the Pope look bad. This actually comes out of Vatican sources in many cases, and that's amazing to me.
Well, that's absolutely true. You know, you talked about there was a time in the 19th century when the interpretation of prophecy began to change, and
right.
people started to look more toward Israel and more toward the future as the fulfillment of these prophecies. And one of the original thinkers about that was a Jesuit from Chile, and his name was Manuel Lacunza. And he's given a lot of credit for one of the early people to see the reformation of Israel in the future,
mm-hmm.
and that these prophecies would take place in the future. And he also saw the Roman Catholic Church as Mystery Babylon in the book of Revelation and the destruction of Rome. And he predicted that the church would grow more apostate and, mm-hmm. and that this judgment would fall on her, which coincides with the prophecy of the popes. It coincides with the book of Revelation. And, you know, it fits well with dispensational thinking as well.
Well, and it's interesting that as you get into Revelation, you're talking about Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots. That vision of the woman and the beast seems to be focused in Europe right now. The European community has that as the symbol on their currency, the woman riding the beast and so forth and so on. And the woman is thought of as not only as Mystery Babylon, but the Babylonian mystery religion, which came to be focused in Rome. And a lot of writers have written about that over the last 100, 150 years. So this is nothing really that new, but what you have done is documented in ways it has not been documented before.
That's true. You know, and it all seems to be coming to a head in some surprising ways. You know, as futurists and dispensationalists, we believe that, you know, mm-hmm. Israel is the focus of a lot of the Bible prophecies.
Yes.
And one thing that I uncovered in the research of this book, you know, we're all kind of looking to see a third temple built in Israel, you know, and,
right.
you know, our reading of 2 Thessalonians and some of the prophecies in Revelation, we see the Antichrist entering the temple and proclaiming himself to be God. And, you know, we believe that that's a future event. And, you know, one thing that I found that is quite astounding is that, you know, the Roman Catholic Church has always had designs on Jerusalem. And, you know, you can look, that was the purpose of the Crusades. I mean, they were sending armies
sure.
there to conquer Jerusalem for the Pope. And, you know, and that never worked out. The Muslims were always able to hold them at bay. And now we have Israel back in their homeland. Yet I uncovered a lot of information about a conspiracy to give sovereignty of the whole holy city of Jerusalem to the papacy. And in fact, there's been several Israeli journalists. Barry Kamish is one of the big ones. Another one named Joel Bannerman, who uncovered a secret deal behind the Oslo Accords in 1993, where an unwritten part of it was a deal to give sovereignty of the holy city of Jerusalem to the Pope.
Wow. Well, as I listen to you guys, I'm listening to words like secret, forgotten, hidden, non-existent. Suddenly all this is popping back into existence, and you've got it all compiled here in one volume. That's the impressive thing to me, Tom.
Man, we got a fantastic introduction in this book written by one of my favorite Bible scholars. And his opening line is, timing is everything, right?
And it is.
And, of course, we know that from the book of Daniel and other places in Scripture that there is something to the idea that knowledge will be concealed until a particular time, until the end times.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, knowledge would be made manifest and would accelerate. And we believe that this could potentially be part of that. When you look at all of the other occult signatures throughout society, what the Catholics themselves believed. Again, I'd want to reiterate, we did not write this book because we had some interest in attacking Catholics. That's not what the book is about.
Right.
The book is about prophecy, and it's why we spent so much time investigating what did the Catholics themselves believe. And, of course, you have Catholics even like Father Malachi Martin. He actually wrote a book called The Final Conclave, and he, too, believed that some of these early predictions from Cardinal Henry Manning and others, that this was actually going to happen, and he bemoaned the fact that the Vatican, where he had spent so much time, he was a confidant to three different popes. He worked for the Vatican translating the Dead Sea Scrolls. He was a formidable polyglot. He spoke something like a dozen languages. Highly qualified guy, but he became somewhat disillusioned with what was going on in Rome, got special permission to move to New York and start writing books, and all his books he called fiction based on fact. And he was very clear, even to the point of saying that that an enthronement of Lucifer, a ceremony, was actually conducted. And he wasn't the only one. There have been other Monsignors, other bishops that have said that at the highest level in Rome, there are priests. They're not true. They're not true priests in the sense that they're dedicated to their dogma. They're infiltrators, basically, Satanism. And this is not me making this up. They're saying this, that it happens. But was happening for a purpose. And it was all pointing towards a moment in time in which a pope would come to power who would be influenced by Satan and would help give rise to the Antichrist. That's among their prophecies, their most famous apparitions. And so we did the investigation to verify that they, too, saw this coming.